This is the Social Link Podcast, episode 26.
Your world, our adventures.
On the whole moment till now, break away. Oh, let me out. Can you let me out? Can you set me free from being stuck in the world? Save me the last bit in the
Anthony, I am really disappointed.
Yeah, I know.
Really?
Because I couldn't play Last of Us because of a disc error that I had.
So, what kind of person pretty much, like, basically, I don't know, maybe uses, like, a Blu-ray disc and, like, drives their car with it? Or, I don't really get these, like, people who are like, oh yeah, you know, here's, I'm gonna let you borrow this disc. By the way, it is fucked up as shit.
Well, it's the type of people. Okay, so here's. I think I know why I'm not making excuses. One, he's not very good at taking his care of his discs, which I found out the other day. I had no clue. Second of all, it's one of those. You know how when you buy a console, you get the sleeve folders.
What are you-
like when you if you buy a console with a game, they don't give you an actual like package. Sometimes they give you the little sleeve folders.
Mm-hmm.
For the game, he left it in that thing too, and that's never a good idea.
Yeah, but even then, I have all my PS1 games there, but you don't see them all tore up.
No. Not all my games go into the fucking... Here's what I do. If a case gets damaged, but the game is fine, I have backup cases, even if it's an old, like, CD case. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because that isn't that better than...
I don't get this. I really, like... How long have you known this person?
For a long time. He only bought now mind you, this might be another reason why. He does not play games. He bought his PlayStation for primarily other things. He did lend me Arkham Origins.
How was the disc on that?
That was good because I borrowed it from him when he first got it.
Okay.
Which was a long time ago, and then you know, that type of thing. And then he lent me this one and it was just I don't know what the fuck was wrong with it. So like I said, you must take care of your discs. Those are $60 investments.
No shit. And why, you know, like, I don't get people who basically, like, do this, and then, you know, they try to trade it in and be like, hey, by the way, here's the game. And then GameStop just looks at them, like, all funny, and then they get pissed off. And I'm like, dude, you know? Like,
well, have you,
it's
have
like,
you known?
Huh?
Have you known someone that does this?
No. Absolutely not. And if I did, yeah. I know what kind of character they are. I'm sorry, but if you're the kind of person who can't take care of your shit, even something as, you know, I mean, Blu-rays are pretty resilient things. Like, they have multiple coats so that any sort of slight nicks and scratches, it can take care of itself. But if we're talking about, like, pretty much, like, it's unplayable, they have to have done a serious amount of damage in order to get this thing to be non-playable.
Yeah, it was really... Well, I freaked out for a moment. You know what I thought it was? The drive giving out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I checked all my games. I even have one game that's terrible. I'll admit, I have one game that's scratched. It's my son's Lego Batman, but that's because that's his game, right? That's an 8-year-old. So I put that in, and that ran, right? But most of my discs are clean, so I put in like Tales of Symphonia, I put in Batman Arkham Origins, I put in, you know, et cetera, et cetera, and they all ran fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't the disc drive. Then I put in Blu-rays, and they ran fine.
Right.
So it had to be the fucking disc.
And you got it from him last night?
No, two nights ago, Tuesday night, and then I came home late from recording the other podcast, and... other activity, and then Wednesday night I put, like I told you, I was gonna put it in, and that's when I saw the problem.
So
what I'm gonna do is this. I'm gonna take the disc, because I have a local mom and pop game store, and they have this nice service called Buffering, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's gonna owe me $5, but getting it buffered.
Okay.
So I can pop.
Why
pop
do
that
I have
bitch.
A feeling that this is not going to work?
It'll work. Now, mind you, I did find the game at a pawn shop. Well, I was told there's a copy of it at a pawn shop for $17. So I might just go buy that as well. So either will work, and I'll have the game by tomorrow evening. And I'll probably catch up to wherever the hell you are.
Honestly, like, I'm not that far in the game, but I was just, you know, like, I was hoping we would have, like, a conversation, because the whole point of actually, like, teasing last week, like, that, yeah, by the way, The Last of Us is so that we can actually, like, talk to you about it, because it'd be your first time, and actually a lot of people's first time on the PS4, so we can actually have, like, a good roundtable conversation about it. But, you know, like you said, you know, you can't actually, like, put people responsible for how they take care of their things, so... Yeah.
I mean, I have fucking, like, for example, I have PlayStation discs from 1999, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thousand Arms comes to mind. Rare game, as you know, right?
Yeah.
Not even a scratch on it.
Dude, okay. I want to say, disc 3 of Final Fantasy VII, and it's cracked. Like, as in, like, it's a clean crack.
Okay.
You know, so basically, you know, so it's, you know, so you would think it wouldn't work. That one
but
works.
It does.
Yeah.
How the hell does it work?
Well,
that's crazy.
Well, because it's an optical disc, right? It's not, you know, it's not scratched up. Even a cracked disc can fucking work, but scratching it, nope, you're pretty much like signing its death sentence. That's why it's unbelievable to me that this happened. It's just it boggles my mind. It's like,
and
dude, like how many years has it been since we've had compact discs?
Since
the 90s, right?
Yeah,
almost
on games or just
in general. Like,
okay.
Any sort of optical medium that tells you, oh, by the way, don't scratch this up because you're gonna fuck it up and you won't be able to use it anymore. It's pretty much like 20 years. I want to say, holy hell.
Yeah, it's insane. And I've been told you're not the first to tell me about the durability of a Blu-ray disc.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard of this, that Blu-rays are just, like, fucking impenetrable.
Yeah.
Now, I want to go back to that Final Fantasy VII disc. That's the only game that you have cracked and it still runs.
Yeah, it still runs. Like, I can pop it into my PS3 right now and it'll run.
See, I have my Final Fantasy 7 through 9 still that I bought, like, day one of each back in the 90s. And... they still run fine.
Yep.
So, I mean, the key thing that I think people don't do, because actually, let's be honest, there are a lot of people that do this. Just put them in your fucking case.
No shit.
So.
I know. It's like, I don't know. My mind is blown, like literally, like, oh my God, there are still people who are not taking care of their discs. And then they complain that they don't work. I'm like, really? Really?
Yeah, I'm not one of those guys. You know what's funny is I still have that Persona 3 and 4 set that you sent me years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Not a scratch.
Yep.
And I played through probably Persona 3 twice with that disc.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
And I always kind of feel like maybe that's the reason why, you know, like, digital is going to proliferate, because people are just too dumb and they can't take care of their discs.
Well, let's be honest here, too. Let's look at digital real quick. And I'll admit, I succumb to the laziness on my 3DS. It's a lot easier to have, you know, switch from Pokemon to, say, Mario Brothers 3 within a snap, right?
Yeah.
And you download a lot of Vita digital, right?
I primarily download Vita games digitally, yes.
Okay. So let's be honest, it's easier than even taking out that little card and switching them out.
Well, my reason for getting games digitally on the Vita is because of its format, you know? I don't want to be carrying around a whole bunch of games with me and then, you know, and kind of like think to myself, oh shit, I forgot this game. You know, it's better for me to actually have access to them digitally, because, you know, that's the medium, right? Like, whereas on a PlayStation, you know, like, a PlayStation 4 and an Xbox, I am not bringing that shit all over the place and then all of a sudden thinking like, oh man, I forgot like my disc for this. I'm like, no, like it's always there, you know? And I have a library so I can show off my games. And while, you know, and there was actually a huge conversation about going all digital on Giant Bomb this week. That was actually really interesting about, you know, because, you know, it almost kind of segues into our conversation about EA and their new subscription service, saying that, you know, there will be a future where subscription-based gaming would be the norm, you know, where the latency would be so low that you won't even be able to perceive that it's actually not being processed locally. You know? So, I don't know. I feel that, I mean, for me, like, I think physical media, even though a lot of my games auto-install on the PS4 now, I think that they're... It's still great to be able to have that option to be like, all right, I'm going to install this. And then, you know, like I'll worry about like, you know, like installing the patches later or something like that. Cause I want to be able to know that the bits and pieces are actually still physically present somewhere as a backup. And in this particular case, the physical media is my backup, you know?
Look, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
That, I'm going to ask your opinion on this. Cause I think you would have a rather interesting opinion. Okay. So, there's a whole collector's thing. A lot of retro gamers like to play the original game on the original console.
Sure.
How do you feel about that? What's your perspective on that?
So, that is interesting because we are in a situation right now where a lot of those older games are coming back in newer consoles. Now, that's assuming that the console owners, in this case Nintendo, you're probably referring to Nintendo.
Yeah, NES, just say.
They are willing to bring these over to, you know, to their next platforms. Now, here's the thing though, and this is something that you probably it's easy to overlook.
Okay.
The virtual console for the Wii U is vastly different than the virtual console for the Wii. In fact, if you bought, I don't know, what would be a good example of a game that exists on both the Wii virtual console and the Wii U virtual console?
Super Mario World.
Yeah, okay, Super Mario World. In order to, I don't know, right now there's a way for you to play Super Mario World on the Wii U if you bought the Wii Virtual Console.
Mm-hmm.
What if they introduce a new platform and now you won't be able to play that game that you bought from two generations ago onto the new platform, and then they offer a new version? And that's kind of like where I'm coming from with this, is that digital isn't something that can last forever. Not to say that physical media will last forever. That also has like a an expiration date, you know? But at the very least, I can control and make sure that the physical media that I have the game on, you know, can, you know, I can make that, you know, make the life lengthier, you know, like I can keep it in a safe place, not touch it for a while, you know, like kind of store it, right?
And your NES can still run it, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, your NES, well, a lot of NESs work well from what I understand.
Right, exactly, and digital is only contingent upon whether or not the company who runs the servers, which stores all these games, are able to pay for it,
mm-hmm.
right? So if those servers are down, or if they take it down, there is no way for you to retrieve them anymore.
Well, I can give you an example of that. That's already happened. Xbox Live, early years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Early months, okay? When I first got my Xbox 360, for some reason, I focused on it a lot. Now, I got it in February of 2006. Xbox Live Arcade, to me, was such like a neat concept, right?
Sure.
Okay, so they released a lot of stuff like Smash TV, a lot of Midway games. Mm-hmm. And mind you, this was a couple years before I think Midway themselves fell apart, right?
Right.
Right, so when they fell apart, a lot of these licenses fell through, and Microsoft was no longer allowed to sell them. So you couldn't play your so if you deleted your versions of Joust or Gauntlet or whatever,
it's gone.
You're fucked. Yeah, you're fucked.
You just basically fucked. Like, you know, paid for a game that doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly, exactly. So you lost all of those games.
Mm-hmm.
Which yeah, it does suck, man.
People don't realize that all the stuff that they bought, you know, is especially digitally, is temporal. That's why for me, like, I am kind of panicking about all the Vita games that I bought, because I remembered really quickly that, by the way, this is not an ecosystem that basically supports, you know, full backwards compatibility anymore. I mean, look at how Sony basically dropped backwards compatibility on the PS4, like, really quickly.
Yeah,
I understand the reasons why, but that doesn't mean that I have to be okay with them, you know?
Okay.
It's great that the Vita could play PSP games digitally. And even then, the physical PSP games that we still don't have, like Crisis Core, for example.
Star Ocean.
Yeah. We'll never be able to play them unless we have the original PSP and the physical copies of those games.
Yeah, that's weird, because it's a lot of people are saying the Vita invalidates the PSP, but it doesn't. There's still a value to owning a PSP.
Mm-hmm.
Because and it's not just those Square Enix games. I think there's a couple of others. I know there's a Tales of the World game that came out that never got digital release.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bunch of other stuff that just is not digital on the PSP.
Exactly.
So I don't know.
Well, what is your opinion on it?
On playing it on the actual console?
Digital versus yeah, sure.
You know what? It's, you know, there's something nostalgic about playing a game on the NES that you can't recreate on a Vita. Now, that's kind of more of a nostalgic thing. But not a Vita, but a 3DS. So my opinion is this. I like the Virtual Console. I think it's great. I think it's cool. But it does have downfalls, right?
Sure.
So here's one of my big gripes. And it's going to tie into what you just said. One of my favorite consoles is the TurboGrafx-16. And one of the advantages of digital is this is a very obscure system. It's not easy to get. Sometimes you can't even find an eBay, right?
Sure.
The games are difficult to get, stuff like that. And then the CD add-on is even harder. So one of the brilliant things about the original Virtual Console is Hudson and NEC just released a fuckload of these games. Tons and tons and tons, both CD games and both HUD cards, which is basically the non-CD game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fucking happy about that, right? Love it, love it, love it. Now, you get to switch over to the Wii U. What's cool is even though Nintendo shut down their servers, they still have the Wii Virtual Store up, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what's going to happen to all those games when you shut them down? And mind you, Nintendo is going at a much more snail's pace releasing these games than they did with the Wii. Like on a Monday, I remember you go check on a Monday on the Wii Virtual Console and you're getting like 6 or 7 games a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go now, you get one game.
Yeah.
And the console availability, even at launch of the original Wii, was much more than what we have. What we have now is NES, Super NES, and Game Boy Advance. And I maybe not even N64.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got those three, and they release one game a week. And now they've been doing all this gimmicky shit like Mega Man Month. Now August is Mega Man Month. This coming August. So it's just going to be nothing but fucking Mega Man game. Give us some fucking Turbo Graphics or N64 shit or Genesis or MSX. That was the beauty of the original Virtual Console. So my feelings is you are absolutely right. That's another downfall. They will take their fucking time to expand their library, and you have to wait based on that basis.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, if you really wanted it, you could just go out on eBay and buy the motherfucker.
Right.
Do I like the Virtual Console? Yes. But it's flawed as fuck. And the same with the PS1 classics. I mean, we're still waiting. Some of us are still waiting on Sokoden 2 and don't want to pay $100 to buy it.
Well, the sad part about that, though, is that, you know, it's obvious why, right?
Right.
It's because they can't support it on the PS4. So their next great solution is to basically have you rent it, which, you know, the PlayStation Now service is now on open beta for everybody, but they still haven't figured out the subscription model for it. And until that happens, people are going to be apprehensive with actually using the service. Granted, I'll tell you what, Anthony, it works like a fucking charm. I want to say The Last of Us is probably on there too. I'm not quite sure. And from what I played of like Ninja Gaiden Sigma 2, it's fucking less lag than anything. Just need to have good internet. And it looks great. But the bottom line...
So you've played it? You've played the beta.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I think that it's great. It fucking, like, it's way better than OnLive.
I remember OnLive.
Yeah, this is fucking great. This is fantastic. And from what I've played, like, it was like... buttery clean, not even like any sort of hint of like, you know, lag or any sort of slowdown or what have you. It was incredible. But that's not the point. The point is that, you know, you need to deliver value, right? And that was one thing that Sony was kind of like making fun of EA with, you know, with their offering, which is basically called Access. Basically, it'll be like a monthly service or an annual service for like $30 a month or a year, where you could basically have like a back catalog of EA titles that you can download. Great idea. So it's kind of like PlayStation Plus. And then for new games, you get a discount. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, here's another service that basically like says, by the way, you have, you know, we have all this stuff, blah, 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 blah. They're unproven. So, and also, like, since it's on Xbox One, think about how many things you're already going to be paying on the Xbox One. So, okay, $30 a year for EA Access. Let's say you want it, right?
Okay.
Okay, that's good. $60 a year to play these games online and other Xbox games online. It's like, okay. Does it really actually add up to like that 10% discount that you actually get when you're buying? By the way, when you're buying games on Xbox Live only, will you actually get the discount?
It may pay off if you're a really, really, really big EA fan. Like if you play all the sports games, if you like Medal of Honor, if you like
Medal of Honor doesn't exist.
Well,
does it?
It doesn't exist.
Not anymore. The last Medal of Honor we've seen is probably 3 or 4 years ago, I think.
Oh, well, Battlefield, those type of things. I'm thinking of EA franchises.
Yeah, okay. Medal of Honor is dead, dude.
Yeah, okay, it's dead. Fine, cool. But EA, if you just like EA in general, it's a value. But I don't think most gamers just like EA. You know, most gamers, despite how critical I am of most modern games and maybe gamers to a degree, everyone picks and chooses from one company, right?
Mm-hmm.
From more than one company. They don't just favor. We do have companies that we favor, but I don't think you buy exclusively from one company. So I think if you did, that might be worth it. But I don't know. I read up on it, and it's even like DLC and shit like that isn't included, right?
Nope.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know if it can compete with
now makes sense because it's more than just one company.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So if you get a subscription service for PlayStation Now to play a la carte, which is any game that you want on the service for, I don't know, maybe an additional $30 a year, maybe.
Okay.
You know, I think that's a great value because not only are you going to be able to play EA games, for example, but you'll be able to play Koei games, Sony games, you know, and whatnot. That's great. And, you know, on top of PlayStation Plus, I think that's okay. Or even give PlayStation Plus members a discount. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, maybe you get $10 off if you're also a PlayStation Plus member. You know, and I think that if they manage to integrate both PlayStation Plus and PlayStation Now subscription, people would be more okay with the idea of paying full price, you know, paying for an annual subscription for both. Mainly because again, there's a variety of games on the PlayStation Now service versus EA Access, which you're pretty much limited to the EA ecosystem. Which, you know, I get what they're trying to do, you know, because they're kind of doing the same thing with Origin. But, you know, the EA back catalog on PS, on the Xbox, on Xbox One, is it for both Xbox One and 360 or just Xbox One?
I think it's Xbox One only.
What?
I think.
How many?
Let me double check.
What the fuck? Okay, I have to check this out too, because that... That's just kind of ridiculous. Let me check. For Xbox One.
Yeah, that's... I thought
okay.
So.
Okay. Because, of course, the Xbox One has so many EA games. Ooh, I really want to play Garden Warfare. Or Battlefield 4, which is broken as shit.
Yay, let's play Battlefield 4.
I don't even... The Vault... Okay, it's... Okay, see... Binge on EA's best Xbox One games, starting with Madden 25, ooh, FIFA 14, ooh, Battlefield 4, oh my god, and Peggle 2, oh my god, that's more than $100 worth of games. You know what? You know what? Let me, humor me here.
Wait a second. Madden 25 was last year, right?
Yeah.
Isn't the new Madden coming out in like a couple weeks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Humor me here. I'm going to look at the GameStop prices for these, all right?
Okay.
Madden NFL 25 is $27.99 for Xbox One. It is on discount from
okay, 40, I'm pulling out my calculator.
From $44.99. Okay. Okay. FIFA.
So we're going 14. By $27.95?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, gotcha.
Okay. FIFA 14. Has a used price of $45.
Okay. All right, we're up to $72.95.
Battlefield 4. Wait, did I get you the used price? Okay, that was pre-owned. That was $45. Okay.
Okay.
Let's see. Battlefield 4 for Xbox One, about $45. Okay.
What's $45?
And
we are up to $117.95.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
So it was 30, right?
Mm-hmm.
Plus 45, plus 45.
Yeah.
It is 120. Okay. And then maybe $15 for Peggle. I'm not really quite sure how much that is.
$132.95.
Give or take.
Yeah.
Okay. So it is a little bit over $100, but that's four games.
Four games. Yeah, that's...
It's $12. Okay, Peggle 2 is $12, but either way.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll say $130. How about that? Even though...
I love the spin. That's more than $100 worth of games for just $5 a month. And I'm like thinking to myself, okay, $5 a month, 5 times 12, that's $60. I guess that's not bad if you really want to play just those four games for a whole year. Jesus fucking Christ.
But let's look at PlayStation Plus by itself and let's not include PlayStation Now.
Yeah.
PlayStation Plus, let's see what we've gotten.
So roughly about last, well, we can't compare last year to this year because they enacted a new model, right?
Right.
So roughly, let's say, okay, let's say, bare minimum, you get three games, one for the PS3, one for the PS4, and one for the Vita, right?
Mm-hmm.
12 for 12 months.
Right.
Different games. That's all we get now. We used to get, you know, several games every week, but now it's just monthly.
Not a bad deal, though.
Mind you, bare minimum, right? Three games. You get 36 games at the end of the year. They're not all good games, but you still get about 36 games at the end of the year.
Yep.
And not just for one console, but for three different consoles, sometimes even cross-platform. So, for example, what is it? Fez, which is going to be cross-buy, which is going to go free this Tuesday.
I can finally play that.
It'll be on the Vita and the PS3 and the PS4, I think. Yeah. That's free across across three platforms.
And then I know we're getting Dragon's Crown, correct?
Dragon's Crown. I believe it's only the PS3 version, right?
Right.
Okay. Because that's
not cross-play. No. I thought it was the Vita version.
Is it the Vita version?
Yeah.
I'll have to check. But basically, like, we're talking, like, you know, like, that's already a lot of value for, like, you know, for just one game to be available for three. I mean, sure, it is the same game across three different platforms, but I feel that there is inherent value to being able to do that and being able to play the same game across three different platforms, because you could, you know, carry over to saves, you know what I mean? Okay, so Road Not Taken for PS4. That's from the guys who made Triple Town. I talked about that game.
Yeah,
What?
Right. Yeah. I just said yeah. You Triple Crown. I remember you telling me about that.
Sure. Crysis 3. Dragon's Crown is actually free for both Vita and PS3, which is nuts. To me, that's, like, just insane. Like, I'm like, because that's not a cross-buy game, but it's actually free for both.
That is insane. That is fucking nuts. Yeah. God damn, why? Let me ask you this. Why?
Wait, say that again?
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Sure.
Okay, so basically, in some cases, they give us more than three games a month, right? Have there been exceptions to this new model?
This is the second month that this model's been out, right?
Okay.
So I don't know if it's going to lower than, you know, than that, which is why I'm just saying it's a baseline three a month. Because at the very least, they will give a game out for PS3, PS4, and Vita. You know, the three consoles that they have right now. So that's why I'm kind of saying that maybe, at the very least, three games.
Hmm.
You know, so...
Very late, yeah.
And how many EA games are there released in a year? Not so much, not a lot.
A lot of sports games.
A lot of sports, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of.
But even then, it's not the new games. Not to say that the PlayStation Plus games are new, but sometimes, like Road Not Taken, they come out with it brand new, and it's free on the service. Road Not Taken is not even out yet. It's coming out this Tuesday, and it's free.
Well, okay. Back up. Game's not out. It's free. What does that say about the quality of game, then? Is that what you're getting at, or no?
I'm saying that compared to something like EA Access, you don't get free games that are brand new from that service. You get old games free from that service. Not to say that the PlayStation Plus, you only get, you know, you get new games from time to time, but still there is the option for, you know, games to actually launch for free on the service. You know what I mean?
I gotcha.
So, for example, Don't Starve launched on the PS4 for free for PlayStation Plus. Rezogun launched on PS4 for free on PlayStation Plus. Road Not Taken, which is this game, is launching for free on PlayStation Plus.
You know, that's happened on PS3 a couple of times that I know of, too. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, the two times that I know of is not super big games, mind you, but games nonetheless. Simpsons Arcade game, when it was released, free, right? When it was ported over.
Sure, yeah.
And Virtua Fighter 5, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
When they made that new port for PS3.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they did that. Twice that I know of. So, I mean, Sony, I don't know. Sony just seems more generous, I guess. I don't know.
It just shows that the EA Access, like the idea behind it, seems to be more self-serving than it is a value for gamers.
I gotcha. You know what it kind of reminds me of? Somebody that actually executes this much better, the style of model that EA is doing much better. Have you heard of the Marvel Unlimited service?
No.
Okay. So as you know, we live in an age where comic books are digital, Comixology, DC, all that shit, right? Now, one of the things I like that Marvel's doing is they have Marvel Unlimited. What Marvel Unlimited is you pay $9.99 a month, right? Mm-hmm. And you have access to probably tens of thousands of their comics. Old comics, that type of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with new comics, they are 6 months behind when they release. So an issue, we're going to be August, right? So issues released in February, you'll probably get on the Marvel Unlimited service now.
Mm-hmm.
So the EA model kind of reminded me of that, but the Marvel model seems a little bit better. Because you also get a huge backlog of stuff. Now, mind you, these are comics, not video games, right?
Right.
But EA could maybe, you know, look into their backlog too. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, but for Xbox One? What backlog do you have on Xbox One? It just launched last year.
Oh, that's true. I forgot.
That's what I was saying. What backlog? What, Madden 98 fucking ported over from PlayStation? What backlog on Xbox One do you have when the console's not even a year old?
I don't know. It's
you have no value. Like, when PlayStation Plus launched, they had a whole library, back catalog of PlayStation 3 games.
Right.
We don't even know what EA's gonna have. And remember as well, that EA also turns off their servers for their multiplayer. So yeah, you may have Madden 25, you may have it for 2 years, and you probably enjoy the hell out of it, but then we run into the issue of digital.
Oh, yes.
When are those servers going to stay awake? When are they still going to be live? I'm pretty damn sure if they see that too many people are playing the old games and not a lot of people are playing the new ones, that they're just going to turn off the old ones.
Because EA is like that.
Yep. Also, the reason why I feel that subscription-based MMOs still have a place in society. Like, you know, while they are soul-sucking, MMOs in general,
Final Fantasy XIV.
They need to be able to maintain not only making new content, but also the maintenance that's involved with storing everybody's information. Imagine if they didn't do that, right? And they just, basically just have it on some schmo's like hard drive. Obviously, like, if that hard drive dies, you're fucked. All that hard-earned data that you worked for, all that loot, is gone.
Yep.
You know?
So the subscription keeps the game alive. So
yep,
yeah.
In both content and the service, like it's not as simple as like, oh, I'm gonna set up a server like a PC here to just to kind of run all the AI in the game and all that. No, it also has something to do with redundancies of data to make sure that your data is not lost. You know, making sure that things like the auction houses function properly, how the interface, how the game interfaces with the server and all that stuff. There's a lot going on in MMOs.
Then, can I ask you this?
Yeah.
I bet they have employees 24/7.
Yep. They have a full 24/7, systems admins, like they go around the clock. They have graveyard shifts and whatnot. There is no, or at the very least, they are on call. You know, at least like the head guy is always on call. Video games are an industry where a lot of people I personally feel are underpaid for what they're supposed to do. And that's why I feel strongly that, that the guys, the people who do the grunt work, the guys who actually design the games need to get paid more. And that really sucks because games are already so expensive, but it's the executives that are actually like making a lot of money, like the higher ups, the publishers, which is why I feel that there's this groundswell of people doing indie games, because they fucking hate that they have no control over their vacation time. So I don't know, like, it's cool that a lot of people can last that way, but I feel that video game development is probably like one of the most underappreciated jobs, like, ever. Yeah.
Well, you've worked in the industry, so I think you would know best.
I worked graveyard for 15 hours straight. And I almost, there was also, I've heard of people working 23 hours straight. No Jesus. Sleep. No, there was sleep. There were breaks. There were lunches, but pretty much 23 hours straight because they needed to push a game out. And I've had people, you know, like who I talked to, producers, you know, and they are, you know, higher ups, you know. They spend weeks not being able to do their laundry. Like that, I've seen tents in like offices because they can't. You know, they're trying to find like a good way to sleep, but the lights are always on. So they literally have like a tent in their cube.
Is that how you? Is that now you worked with? Who was it? You don't mind me saying. I forgot who it was. You worked with Activision. I know that on some Activision
games,
right?
I can only speak from how it was when the industry, this, you know, the previous generation started, like, which is around 2006, 2005, 2006.
Okay.
I don't really know how it is now, but I would imagine that it has not changed.
Or it's gotten more strenuous.
Of course it would have gotten more strenuous. Like, look at how good the games look now. Unlike movies, these things have to be created from scratch. Nothing is ported over from their previous games. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to start. Character models, programming, everything has to be programmed, right? Every instance.
Not correct? Just programmed. Talking about, like, actually designed, modeled, created. Every single tree that you see in a video game, it is not SpeedTree automatically fucking making that shit. Somebody had to put that down there. It's not that easy. This is not like something that they would press a button and then magically they'd make a fucking game.
I mean, you have to have a knowledge of a lot of things to make a really good game. It's not just simply, oh, you're a programmer. You have to have a good storyteller. You have to have an artist. You have to have, you know, someone that understands, you know, certain aspects of certain things. Like if you make a sports game, can I bring that up real quick? Mm-hmm. I would imagine you'd have to have sports advisors or some shit on there, right?
Yeah, of course. Like, you know, you'd have to basically hire people and stuff, make sure that you're doing things right, you know, that you capture the game, the feel of it and stuff. You have to make sure that it feels right. That's where QA comes in. There's a lot. But, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, it's just not, I don't know. Like, I feel that game development is just not, I mean, I don't know. There are other positions that you can get paid more than game development.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how much game development pays for. Maybe 40,000 a year.
A producer gets paid about 60K. 60, 70. That's not a lot.
Really? Yeah. So 60K, you would with as big as the industry is, you think like in the hundreds of thousands, right?
Yeah.
God damn. And why not? Why?
A lot of programmers aren't even at 100,000.
Christ.
Yeah. Sometimes Jesus. It's like the average, I think, for a programmer is about 80,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember, and this goes back I remember Jeff Keighley was producing those Final Hour videos for a while on mm-hmm. games.
Yeah.
And you said those were accurate depictions of how it was before a game got to launch, to a degree.
I don't know which one specifically that you're talking about. Well, I think we're talking about Mass Effect 3, maybe, most likely.
Yeah, Mass Effect 3 was one of them. And then I think there was a couple others, right? Or just are you just thinking of the Mass Effect 3 one?
I haven't seen any of the other ones. So that's why I can't speak for any of those.
Okay. But how was the Mass Effect 3 accurate to what you experienced, or was it kind of...
To be honest, it's been a long time. Okay. I don't even remember anything about it.
Yeah, I remember you told me about that. Well, you know, it's a game industry, and, you know, the game industry is...
It's like the game industry is not fun.
It is not.
It's not. A lot of the time, you have to stick with your idea for 4 years. And sometimes you're so fucking sick of it that you don't want anything to do with it.
And that's why you see a lot of frustration from indie developers too.
Yeah.
Especially because, the Fez guy, I know a lot of people like to cut him down and I'm not fond of him myself, but I think a lot of his frustrations are, from what you told me, probably legit.
Yeah. He's one of two dudes working on it.
God damn.
And I read somewhere recently that the average income of one person making an independent game annually after taxes and everything, or, you know, like after fees from, you know, Steam and all that stuff's taken out, God, 70K.
Really?
Yeah. That's after 4 years of hard work.
Jesus.
Or 70K a year.
And, okay, so Steam fees. Are they pretty high or are they pretty reasonable? Do you know this or no?
No, I don't know. But I would imagine it would be, you know, like, they're not going to put your game up there for free.
So I would imagine.
They get a cut out of every purchase.
Of course, that's how they make their money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's naive to think, oh, Steam will just put it up for you for free. They need to keep themselves running, right?
Yep. Again, to pay for the servers.
Mm-hmm. And servers, from what you've explained, are pretty fucking expensive. They're like babies. You have to maintain them.
Pretty much.
So let me ask you a quick question. Let's go to a Final Fantasy XIV question related to this. Do servers ever go down because of chaos, like something going wrong in that game? Or
Final Fantasy actually takes down their servers at least once a week. And it's so that they can make sure that the disk drives and all that stuff are basically spinning properly, and to avoid memory leaks, which basically cause imbalances. I mean, you know, like when you're in Windows and sometimes Windows just doesn't work, your mouse doesn't move, your keyboard doesn't work.
Which is a lot in my cases, you know, so.
Yeah, so, well, I haven't experienced that on a Mac, but some people do. Those are memory leaks, you know, because that sometimes, you know, an application uses too much memory, and the only way to combat it is to basically restart it. And Final Fantasy XIV, they're very transparent when something bad is happening. If you go to their main website, the Lodestone, which is their blog, they basically tell you if there's an all worlds maintenance. That's what they call it. And what it is an announcement saying, by the way, we're taking this down from this time to this time. This is what we're doing with it. These are the services that are affected. PlayStation Network actually goes down too, you know, for maintenance from time to time, as you know. But what's interesting though is you'll notice that they'll say, if you're already on the service, if you're good. Which usually gives you an idea of what servers they're actually maintaining, which is the login servers.
Yeah.
You know, so the actual servers that keep you online and do multiplayer and all these other services, great. The login servers are at the issue. And I know this happens from time to time because it affects Final Fantasy XIV as well.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, because like, if you're playing Final Fantasy XIV and the login servers are down, how are you going to play the game?
Exactly. You can't get into the motherfucker.
Yep.
So real quick. On this topic real quick, I imagine, like, if a server goes down, right, which is a physical computer itself, right?
Yeah.
A physical, you know, with a game that lasts for years, say Warcraft.
World of Warcraft,
World of Warcraft, yeah. Say, for example, that one. I would imagine that they would have to constantly buy new equipment, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's and that's partially where your fees go to.
Exactly. Hard drives. New hard drives. So let's say a hard drive dies. You know, like, because it's not just one hard drive that stores your information. It's redundancy. It's called redundancy. It's a RAID. It's a RAID array. And a RAID array is basically a whole bunch of hard drives that contain the same amount of information. The reason why it's redundant is so that if one or two hard drives die, your information is still copied over onto other hard drives. And then they just replace the other hard drives, and then they copy over the information there, and your information is safe.
I gotcha.
So there was a lot of constant replacing and, you know, pulling out of hard drives, pulling back in, and all that stuff that's happening. But also, like, you know, with server hardware, you know, like, let's say a world keeps going down, you know, like, they have to take down the world and then take a look at it, and then maybe they'll realize that something is fried on there, so they have to buy server hardware in order to compensate for that, you know? It's not cheap. you know, like maintaining an MMO is not cheap, which is why it's funny to me that there are MMOs that say that they function on a free to play basis, you know, but they what they're really doing is they're gouging a lot of players a lot faster. You know, like they're actually getting them to pay a lot more a lot sooner. Which to me is just fucked up.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll tell you this.
Okay.
In the month that I played Guild Wars 2, I spent $150 on that game.
Okay.
That is
on what?
Money. So I can afford shit. Because they made it so that the money is so scarce that the quickest way that you can actually get money in that game is to use real money.
Holy shit. So there was a major catch with this big retail game that they had hyped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No monthly fees. Of course there's no monthly fees. Because if you want to get all the money that you can in order to afford the gear that you want, you're going to have to basically grind for hours. Or hours.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's how they fucking get you these days with this free-to-play shit.
Exactly.
So, you know what? I'm going to tell you something real quick, and then we can move on real quick. You know, I was a big fan of Neverwinter Nights. I still am, right? You know what people attempted to do with that game at one point?
What?
They attempted to run their own MMO worlds.
Oh, wow.
They did. They really, really did. Now, mind you, I played this game from the beginning it came out. My golden days were 2002 to about 2005, 2006, right?
Mm-hmm.
Around mid-2003, you started seeing these servers start begging for money. Now, mind you, let me explain why. Even though you're running through the old GameSpy network, right? You mm-hmm. still have to have a fucking computer to host it, right?
Yep.
Now, mind you, it wasn't built to host like hundreds of people like Final Fantasy 14 or thousands of people. 64, but that can still be taxing on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And people were asking for donations and money and like and that now, right?
Server now, racks, basically. They need server racks, yeah.
Pretty much to run MMO worlds on a game designed, which is ironic for a certain type of multiplayer, not MMO style, but a certain type, like I would say maybe the closest would be a Secret of Mana style.
Sure.
Type of role play, as opposed to your MMO style. So you started seeing these different fucking MMO servers just collapse after, you know, collapse, you know? And it was, you know, people learned you can't just set up an MMO server. You just can't.
What are you going to do? You're going to set up like an MMO server on a fucking tower? Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. You just, even if the game is supported somewhere else on other servers, you just can't do it that way. You can't. You cannot do it that way because what GameSpy did was it was a peer-to-peer thing, right? Mm-hmm. And it would move on to, you know, it would move on from them hosting it when you would log onto the game to that you hosting it, right? So, right. Dude, I'll be honest. It just, you know, that's when I started learning that MMOs are just something you cannot set up. And Neverwinter Nights it's designed to, you know, like role play your own little, you know, dungeon master type thing, which is six people, which is cool, right? And it still is.
Yeah.
But MMOs, it's just not for.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I remember it was 2012, about 2 years ago. It was kind of interesting. For a charity, Blizzard and Activision actually auctioned off all of its old server blades to people.
Wow! And what did people do with them?
Well, I don't know. It's just a collector's item. People signed on Blizzard had like a little kind of plaque right next to them, you know, and it actually says, it has the name of the server and then, you know, in silver, and then it has the period of when it was live all the way it was down. And then it has like a little inscription and then like signatures from some of the developers.
That's pretty cool.
Yep. Like an actual server blade, like with RAM and everything. It is basically a mini fucking computer.
You know what, though? I guarantee you at least one person fucked with that shit. Yeah, I guarantee you.
They probably emptied it, though.
Yeah.
I don't think it actually has the hard drive.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, because there's like a little, the inscription and the plaque seems to be where the hard drive would be. So, yeah, no information.
Wow, we went from scratch discs all the way to the game industry.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is crazy. It says here, I'm gonna read this. This is for a server called Minahonda. This was basically like commissioned from September 29, 2006 to June 15, 2010. And it says, Blizzard Entertainment has carefully preserved and archived our retired server blades, releasing only a limited number for our noble cause. To us, the server blade is more than just hardware. Within the circuits and hard drive, a world of magic, adventure, and friendship thrived. From fishing in quiet lakes to defeating Arthas in Ice Crown Citadel, this blade was home to thousands of immersive experiences across the world of Azeroth and beyond. We thank you for safekeeping this important part of history. So it's a big fucking deal that they do this, this quote encompasses how important this information is for the guys running MMOs. These are people's lives. These are people's virtual lives that are encased in this piece of silicone.
Yeah, you know what? While you were saying that, I was thinking those are whole universes. Those are living, breathing worlds. You know, I know that sounds stupid, and people are like, you're full of shit. It's not alive. It's make believe. No, they were brought alive by these people, and now they're frozen in time.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And that may finally, you know, years later, let's say 12 years from now, because I predict Final Fantasy 14 will have a long life. 20 years from now, how about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, they have a plan in 10 years. So let's put it that way.
Okay, let's go 20.
Plan. Yeah.
Let's go 20 years from now. Your world, your adventures with Ted, and hopefully, with me soon in September, mind you. September 12th is the weekend.
You pretty much resolved. Like, yeah, it's happening. No worries, it's happening.
Well, I'll tell you this. I will be joining your group September 12th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sound good? Okay. Or that weekend, at least. But, moving on, your world, our adventures, will be encased in plastic 20 years from now. But Jesus, I don't know if Square Enix would do that.
I don't know. Maybe they would. I mean, you know, Yoshida is a really cool guy, and okay, there was one big news about Final Fantasy that's not related to me playing the game that we can talk about.
I knew we had to talk about Final Fantasy 14 in some capacity.
Yes. It wouldn't be an episode of any podcast that Gamer Horizon has without any mention of Final Fantasy 14 in our show. I mean, there was already a lot of talk, like, on the Backlog Barbecue about it, because, like, Ari is hook, line, and sinkered into it. I mean, he started this past Sunday, I want to say? Or was it two Sundays ago? And he's already almost at level 50.
Now, mind you, Ari's like me. He's very, with MMOs, I should say, standoffish, right? I would say, or no?
No. He's not standoffish at all, no.
Okay. We're going to see if this MMO can finally win me over. If this is the MMO I've been waiting for.
Yeah, we will see. We'll definitely see. But the news this week is that today, when we're recording this, which is July 31st, Pacella Resorts and Square Enix actually opened up the Eorzea Cafe in Akihabara. And what it is, it's basically a Final Fantasy 14 themed cafe/restaurant.
I heard about this. And they sell like potions and shit as drinks, right?
Yeah. Soda, but it's basically potions.
And then, like, do they have a Phoenix Down?
I didn't look at the potions closely. I was more interested in the dishes and what they actually had in store inside the restaurant.
Now it's Final Fantasy 14 themed, so you won't be seeing anything from other Final Fantasies, right?
Well, to be fair, everything in Final Fantasy 14, like Final Fantasy 14 has its paws on every single Final Fantasy, I feel. So, technically, yes, it does.
So it's a what the dude? I wish we could get something like this.
Yeah,
I know. Would be cool.
So
that would
be. Yeah, so this restaurant is themed after the Carline Canopy in New Gradania, which is a kind of like a cafe in a physical location in the game. It's not exactly the same, but it's themed. You know, it has a lot of elements of it. The Eorzea Cafe is actually filled with, you know, Moogles from one of the fights, or one of the primal fights. It has reproductions of actual weapons in the game, and they have like four PC stations where you can actually play the game. I don't know why. So it's actually rather interesting because you can tell like there's a lot of time put into this place. Like, I was really surprised that they had, like, you know, it's funny because, like, I was looking at some of the weapons and I'm like, okay, I recognize that weapon. I've seen that on somebody. And I saw, like, you know, and I'm an archer and I saw a bow there and I was like, I actually used that when I was level 15.
That's my bow!
Yeah, I was like, holy fuck, this is a trip, you know? It's like,
I saw Moogles.
Yeah.
I saw Moogles in there.
Yeah, there are Moogles there.
Very cool.
They have, like, swords and shields. They even have, like, the monk, you know, gloves and stuff like that, which is great. They have coasters that they actually, like, are collectible, that have the artwork from, oh my god, I forgot the artist's name. Basically, like, the original primal artwork for the game, which is great. And then they have, like, the name of the primal in the font, Eorzean font, which is awesome. But the dishes are pretty creative. So there are 60 plus dishes in this place.
60?
Yeah. A lot of them are actual dishes that you can craft in the game. So there's a dish called the Lanotian toast. So you can actually get Lanotian toast with orange spread as an actual meal over there. Which is basically like French toast, I think. Well, it's just, you know, buttered toast with, you know, orange spread.
I can make that here at home.
Yeah, pretty much. And then there's themed stuff like marmot steak. And if you ask what the hell a marmot is, it's a fictional enemy in Final Fantasy. There's kind of like some cute stuff like Gilgamesh Tonkatsu. There's the Ifrit Radiant Plume Pizza. It's basically like named after certain
Ifrit pizza.
There's an Ifrit pizza, so you can imagine it's probably really super hot and spicy, maybe.
Yeah, that probably would be suiting for that character.
Yeah. There's a Titan Weight of the Land Burger, which you can probably imagine it's probably a big burger. it's pretty creative. So there's a Bahamut Giga Flare curry, but
Jesus,
yeah. And then there's the Leviathan Tidal Wave or Tsunami Soup. I mean, it's, you know, it goes on and on.
Know what, like I said, that weekend cannot get, now that you told me, but well, I knew about the cafe, right? Yeah. Two things real quick. I saw a sandwich with, like, fucking sword stabbing to it, little swords.
That's the Gilgamesh Tonkatsu.
Okay. There you go. Makes sense. And then that weekend, I will join you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know how I'll fit in because I'll be, like, low level or something.
We can help you out. Don't worry about it.
You'll probably give me the best shit in the game. Not joking. I don't need that.
It's easy. I mean, the whole part of the experience is you know, just being able to learn like some of the ropes in the game. So we're not going to deny you of that.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm just excited to go looking around and seeing Easter eggs and shit like that too.
Well, a lot of it's storyline related, so you have to like really work hard to get to those parts.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pumped.
Yep. We do have an email.
Okay.
That we need to read. This is by Lewis, our number one fan.
Lewis.
It says, "Dear Alex and Anthony, how much should a game listen to their fans? What I mean was, look at Capcom's situation, which they don't have a lot of money in the bank because they refuse to listen to their fans, i.e. a Mega Man game, or Koji Igarashi leaving Konami because of his fans wanting a real Castlevania game. Me personally adding English voice in Japanese games..." I think he just cut off his own thought there.
Yeah.
A game company does not have to listen to their fans. And that might sound very controversial, but it's that kind of attitude that has made Nintendo thrive.
Mm.
When a lot of people say, like, "Oh, you should do this, you should do that," Nintendo wouldn't do it. They would just basically say, "All right, well, we'll do this instead." You know?
Also, let's be honest. The fans, I'm going to say something even more controversial. The fans aren't always right, because, look, let's talk about something that I've talked about before real quick. Shenmue 3 and Mega Man Legends 3. People want this game, right?
Sure.
And it seems like a lot of people want it, but that's only because of the circles that I'm in, because I'm kind of in the niche game circles, right?
Right.
But you go out, and let's be honest, the mainstream, the majority of people who play, you know, your shooters and your mainstream games, they don't give two fucks about Mega Man Legends 3, and they don't give two fucks about Shenmue 3, do they?
Nope.
No, they don't. And again, I'm a guy who, and I've told you this, I believe it's okay to have your opinion even if you're in the minority. But there's just some cases where you have to be in the majority, and, you know, the fans don't always know right. I know they keep saying Shenmue 3, Shenmue 3, Shenmue 3. You can't just make fucking Shenmue 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just can't make it. That a game like that, with the scope that people want, will take fucking years, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not just that.
Yeah.
You have to also take into account what is going to fund Shenmue 3. What kind of games... Like, they have to make money in order to... They have to make money in order to fund something. You know? Sega's not in a good position where they're making a lot of money these days.
It seems like they're publishing more than anything else, right?
Yeah. I mean, the Alien game is very risky.
It's probably their biggest release. Well, I know there's a Sonic game coming out, but I would say...
I don't think they're expensive at all.
Yeah, but here's what I'm saying, though. I think the Alien game is taking more precedence over that Sonic game. It's probably a bigger risk than the Sonic game.
Yeah.
Because Sonic kind of has its little following, I suppose. And there's still a group of people that like those games. I stopped caring after, what was it, Sonic and Knuckles. So, there you go.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's... And it's the same thing with Capcom and Mega Man 3, Mega Man Legends 3. Weren't they going to make one for the 3DS, I heard?
I don't know. I really don't know. So, you there? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're so quiet. What the fuck?
I was contemplating something. There is a time, though, that it is good when the fans listen, and that's Project Operation Rainfall.
That's it. But that's different, though, because the company who actually made the game didn't actually release it here. So, for example... Xenoblade Chronicles, if I remember correctly, that's a Nintendo-published game in Japan, correct?
Right, yes it is.
They didn't release it here.
Yeah, they did.
No.
What, Xenoblade Chronicles?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
I thought Nintendo released it.
No.
I don't think you're right on this.
No. No, you got me. No, I thought you meant they didn't release the game at all.
They did release it.
Yeah, they did release it. I think it was an XSEED and Nintendo and GameStop type thing, because it was exclusive at GameStop. Remember?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think XSEED published it. I don't think it's a Nintendo product.
Yeah.
So, well, I think it is. It's just because they own Monolith. I know that, but I just think XSEED brought it over. So it don't matter. But yeah, how do you feel about that? Do you think the fans are sometimes right or sometimes wrong?
I already told you what my opinion is. I don't know why you're asking me about it.
Well, no. Like, I know I heard what you said earlier, but it's just one of those things. I was thinking it in a different context, but I know what you said earlier, though. We just talked about it. So, Ed Lewis have any more questions?
No, that's actually it.
Okay.
Yep.
Indeed. Interesting show. We went all over the place, huh?
Yeah, we did. Totally.
Very good.
Good. Yeah, I have nothing else to add except get that fucking Last of Us working.
I will get it working. I want to look. You know what I did? I looked at trailers. Now, not the PS4 one, because again, I didn't realize there were spoilers, but you said there were, so I didn't watch that one. But I watched the launch trailer from last year, and I'm like super like hyped from this game. And people keep telling me, well, it's, you know, it said it did the whole relationship better than BioShock Infinite. Somebody told me. I don't know if you would agree with that. Like,
I can't color your opinion this early because you haven't even played both games. I want you to formulate your own opinion.
Okay, I gotcha. Well, I'm going to go in with it with the expectation that I have none. How about that? And I'm going to try to formulate and try not to watch so much of the hype or any of the Twitch streams that's going on.
Yep.
So tomorrow night, I'm going to stay up late and play Last of Us with the lights off.
Okay. If you want to do that, that's fine.
Why? What's wrong with
that? Nothing. I'm just saying, if you want to do that, that's fine. I'm not going to say anything.
God damn it. Okay. Well, we'll talk about it next week for sure. And hopefully. Yeah. For sure.
Okay.
Scout's honor.
If you don't, I will add another game to the requirements that you have for this year. Not as part of like the secondary stuff that I've said. No, I'm going to add one more game if you don't manage to play it by next week.
And you know what game I know what game you have in mind.
You don't.
You
actually don't.
I was thinking Far Cry 3, but
okay. You have no idea.
Okay. Oh, you know what? I don't even want to know what game that is. You sound like a sadistic bastard saying that. So let's just play The Last of Us tomorrow night. How about that?
Good luck.
Okay.
All right. So until next week, we'll remember, email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. Be sure to tune in to my Twitch stream at twitch.tv/backlogbattle_Alex. But if you want an easier way to keep track of us, facebook.com/gamerhorizon and twitter.com/gamerhorizon. Just follow any of those and you'll get notifications as to when we actually pop up and, you know, do our streams, any of us. So it's me, Ted, whenever Ari and Anthony get around to it, them too. And of course, listen to Backlog Barbecue. And of course, go to GamerHorizon.com because that's where you'll find all our news articles and even, you know, blog posts, because I think we're going to start doing some of that stuff in the future. Well, at least I am, but we'll see if the other guys follow suit. So until next week, we'll see you guys later.